If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Nurse Wellness Podcast, hosted by Wendy Garvin Mayo, focuses on the power of stress management and how it's foundational to being your best, doing your best, and giving your best. There's a wonderful episode that you should check out called Letting Go, where Wendy Garvin Mayo shares 6 strategies to release control and manage stress effectively. Check out Nurse Wellness Podcast on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the On the Road to the Gambia podcast, where we are bridging boundaries for global health equity. I am Dr. Carol Penn, doubly board certified in family medicine and obesity medicine. I am a best-selling author and a master meditation, movement, and mindset coach, serving as the director of tracks and electives, assistant professor of family medicine at our nation's newest medical school, Rocky Vista University, Montana College of Osteopathic Medicine. I am the proud co-founder of the Institute for Community Evolution. Together with Sunu Ryu, the University of the Gambia, Penn Global Visions, and the Edward Francis Smalls Teaching Hospital, we are fostering a new era of global healthcare collaboration. I'm excited to bring you the amazing stories of 15 clinicians from the U.S. who will travel to the Gambia and exchange cutting-edge knowledge with Gambian medical professionals to uplift communities and empower each other to become compassionate and culturally sensitive healthcare leaders on both sides of the Atlantic. So put on your headphones and listen as we explore this transformative journey to the Gambia.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the On the Road to Gambia podcast. I am your host, Dr. Lisa Herbert, a board-certified family physician, best-selling author, speaker, and executive leadership coach. And I help physicians transition into leadership roles so that they can become the respected voices in healthcare. So I'm excited to be back again, bringing you another wonderful guest to our podcast. And for those of you who may be joining us for the first time, I just want to tell you a little bit about some background about this podcast. So this podcast is highlighting the steps of 15 clinicians from the United States who are about to embark upon a transformative journey with the Institute for Community Evolution, Sunu Ryu, University of Gambia, Penn Global Visions, and the Edward Francis Small Teaching Hospital to foster a new era of global healthcare collaboration. So today we have with us my guest, Dr. Adaina Upchurch Burrows, and she's going to tell us a little bit about herself and sort of what inspires her to join this collaboration. So welcome to the podcast, Dr. Upchurch.
Hi, I'm good. You can call me Adaina. That's fine.
Dr. Adaina, yes. So I'm excited to have you here. So first, let's just start off by you telling us a little bit about who Dr. Adaina is. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. So my name is Adaina Upchurch Burrows. That's my full name. I am a pediatrician. I am from St. Louis, Missouri. I went to school at Howard University. I call myself a triple bison because I went to Howard both for undergrad, medical school, and for residency. So I'm a bison through and through. I've been practicing pediatrics in the Hampton Roads area for 20 years now, just about 20 years now. And in addition to that, I love the transformation that a human makes from birth to 21. You have like so many different stages of a human being that you get to witness transition and that I play a role in developing and help to develop and shape young minds. So I love that. I love the different challenges, believe it or not, when we have to figure out when a nonverbal person is trying to tell us something to do. I also love fitness. I love working out. I love exercising. I love dancing. I just became a certified personal trainer within the last week or so. So, and that's just to help with where healthcare is going and just the state of the United States anyway. But I am excited to travel with this wonderful group of talented, brilliant, intelligent young women who happen to be physicians of color and one young man. Oh, sorry about that. Hopefully that didn't mess it up. I've always wanted to do a medical mission, always. And when the opportunity arose just by happenstance, because another doctor, Dr. Neela, I was on the phone with her and she had just come back from a mission. And then she told me about the Gambia. She sent me an email and was like, yo, they're having a Zoom meeting in 5 minutes. I hopped on literally by faith. So I'm excited just to go, to learn and to experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to this as well. And, you know, we just met through this collaboration. Yeah. And I agree. I think it's just a wonderful group that's going. So many talented minds. And our backgrounds are so different. Right?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah. So when you think about sort of like your journey through medicine and sort of where you are right now, who or what was instrumental in that decision for you?
Believe it or not, I've always wanted to be a doctor since I was 5. There's nothing else on this earth that I wanted to be but a doctor. Now, coming out of undergrad and going into med school, I did not want, pediatrician was not the top, even though I worked with children all of my life in some shape or form. It wasn't till like my third year of med school that I'm like, you know what? Let's do peds. I thought I was going to be a surgeon, OB, ER, but peds just felt natural for me. So my pediatrician, I would say, was the inspiration. I don't even know. I just loved my pediatrician. He took good care of us. And just the many mentors that I've had during my years of residency at Howard in Washington, D.C., awesome doctors who taught us the nitty gritty, how to diagnose when you're at an institution that may not have all the technology that was available at that time, to use your head, differential diagnosis, to see what they were doing in the community and how they made an impact on patients and even residents who were ahead of me. So my influences after, you know, I was going definitely towards my goal of becoming a doctor were my attendings. They were awesome, brilliant, smart individuals who required us to think, to use our brains deeply.
Yeah, so it's so important to have, right, those mentors and people who inspire us. And my story is very similar like yours. I didn't know any, I wanted to be anything else, always since the age of 5 as well. Always knew I wanted to be a doctor. And I think that sometimes there are, you know, things in our lives, experiences, people mm-hmm. in our lives who sort of continue to push us forward. So, yeah, so happy to hear that for you.
Yes.
So in your like day to day as a pediatrician, mm. you know, what does that look like? Who do you serve? You know, what challenges do you face? Kind of what's going on in that life?
Okay, Lisa, Dr. Lisa. Okay. So the office that I work in is in Norfolk, Virginia. And the community is one of a lower socioeconomic community. So we have a lot of Medicaid patients. We are in an area where the majority of the schools are Title I's, I want to say. I may get this confused, Title I and Title IX, Title I schools. So the education level may not be high school graduates, you know, but then we have some professionals too. So I work in an environment where people may not have that much. And they're looking for people who look like them. You know, they're looking for some brown people who look like them because they've gone to different places where they've been treated differently or just passed over. So my day-to-day schedule can range from anything from a well-child visit, sick visit, to fortunately or unfortunately, now I have to be a counselor, therapist, psychologist, and psychiatrist, diagnosing depression, anxiety, ADHD. And so a lot of that, what I'm seeing is so different than when I first started. We have a lot of more kids dealing with a lot of different issues that they are privy to and that they are surrounded by. And then I have to, unfortunately, and I'll just be candid with you, Lisa, because I'm just a real doctor. That's what I tell my patients. I have to deal with different ways that people try to get over on the system, you know, and expect me to play the role with them. And when I have to say no, you know, you be an advocate for yourself. And rather than falling through the cracks, let's step over this crack, seal this crack, so we don't have to go through that. So I have to deal with a lot of that. And it comes from some of it, I would say, comes generational. When this is all you know, this is what you do. Just trying to make sure kids see the importance of education, because with the advent of social media and YouTube, so many kids want to go viral, should I say. And that's it, you know, to take life seriously. Education is still a serious thing. And I think it's still important for us to move ahead in life. So I can have a day where I'm dealing with that. And then in different seasons, asthmatics come in. So it's a gallant. There is never a dull moment. And then you have to deal with the paperwork. So it's so many different facets.
Yeah. And, you know, it is very challenging, you know, now, I think for a lot of clinicians. And like you, you know, I practiced also for 25 years. So we were aware of what it was 20 years ago and aware of sort of what the environment is now. And so new problems bring new challenges, and new challenges, you know, need new solutions. So I kind of feel like doing things like this collaboration that we're a part of, and just sort of extending the olive branch, you know, past what the status quo is, hopefully will help us to set a new, you know, a new normal, if you want to say, you know, for how we deal with a lot of the problems.
But it helps for me when you talk and you talk and you don't realize they're paying attention. Somebody is. It just, if it's 1 out of 100, I'm okay with that. Somebody got it. Somebody is listening and trying.
Right. Just being able to change and touch one life, right?
Yeah.
So what inspired you to want to, you know, become involved with this Gambia project and volunteer your time, you know?
What inspired me to see medicine in a different light, to get my love back for what I've always wanted to do, to see it in a non-Western environment, to see some appreciation, also to grasp hold of a different way of life, of how the Gambians may use natural healing, the medical, I don't want to say the medical doctors, but how they can, natural healing, how the leaders, the elders do different things. So I wanted to see something outside of the United States. I wanted to see pathology, for lack of a better term, because you miss that. You miss that. I can't tell you that you can miss pathology. You get so caught up in the autopilot. Autopilot. I want to come off of autopilot. I want to be able to be shocked, for lack of a better word, to use my brain to see, to watch, to learn, to love what I do again, to love what I do again.
Hey, leading ladies, stay right there and we will be back with my amazing guests. This conversation is so good that you don't want to miss it. So stay tuned.
Yeah.
I still love it, but I want a different type of love, if you understand.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what do you hope to bring to the Gambia in terms of like your expertise, your background?
Okay. I would hope to bring, I love to teach. I love to teach, meaning to teach so that anyone from any educational background, social economic background, we can all be on the same playing field, all level. So I love to teach. I love to make it plain and clear. So that's what I hope to bring. My ability to try to relate at different levels, and not just me being, I'm a doctor and you're a student or a resident. I don't know. We have a common goal. So I want to just bring my love for being able to teach.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I think that that's what they're wanting from us, right? As well, to bring our perspective, to bring our knowledge from the United States, you know, the way in which we were trained there. And then we also garner something from them as well.
Exactly.
So, you know, going into the Gambia, a lot of us is going to be our first time, you know,
mine, definitely my first time.
Mine as well. So what do you know? Like, what is your perception and awareness about some of the medical challenges that may be, you know, that may exist there, and that you hope that maybe we can help to address?
Some of the challenges that I think may exist or hopefully we can address are the access to medicine, access to a medical exam, access to a diagnosis, access to treatment, finding if we are able in the short period that we're there to see where the there's the breakdown of need and being able to supply that need. I would love to be able to fill that gap or start making measures so those gaps can be filled and ongoing. As far as infection, what, you know, infectious diseases are going on, especially with diarrhea, because definitely some gastroenteritis is one of the things that they have with children anyway. I'm not sure what their access and what the culture is on as far as STIs and different things. So I have to be very sensitive of what I do say and introduce and what can be seen as taboo. But I'm really wanting to see if there's a breakdown in access, how access can be made possible.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when we look at access and we talk about the term access, right, is different in different countries. So we have our own healthcare access issue here. They have a healthcare access issue there as well. And not that one is better or worse than the other, because lack of access is just lack of access, right? And at the end of the day, someone's not getting what they need.
And what they have available, I have a very dear friend. She's Haitian. And she has family and friends in Haiti, and this little girl needed, I guess I'll tell myself, albuterol. She had asthma real bad in Haiti, and she used some type of medicine I had never heard of. So I looked it up. I'm like, oh, that's just albuterol, but it's used under another name, like albuterol. So I was able to get her an albuterol inhaler. She went to the doctor and showed the doctor what was sent to her. The doctor said, oh, that's the good one, and kept it.
Oh boy.
Kept it.
Wow.
And kept it. So that, like, what is available? And if it's available, is it available for the masses? And is there a breakdown between healthcare and if you're able to access it because you have the money, you don't have the money? I would love to see what all that plays part.
Absolutely. And when we think about albuterol, we think about that as something easy, right? Very easy to get, easy for the most part, inexpensive, you know, depending on, you know, obviously the brand or whatever, but for the most part, very easy to access and life-saving, you know? So to think that, that was something that was lacking. Speak volumes to obviously the difference in healthcare access across the globe.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, we obviously are going to be facing a lot of challenging cases like that, you know, facing probably a lot of unexpected things, conditions. So tell me a little bit about like how you prepare yourself for things like that, or how have you responded in the past to kind of sudden changes or unexpected conditions? Like, yeah, how did you adjust and what was that like?
I think, you know what? I honestly thrive off of things like that. You know, I said if I didn't do primary care, if I had to do it all over, I think I would probably do pediatric ER, because I thrive off of it. You know, when I'm faced with something that is not in routine, not on my schedule, you just walked in here and you're having a seizure, or you walked in here and you literally cannot breathe. So I have to take a deep breath and try to remain calm, because I have to make sure my field and everybody who's working with me remains calm. So I try to remain calm, do my ABCs, grasp hold of the situation and make an evaluation and just move from there. And then you have to delegate and make sure, you know, delegate responsibility, make sure you fix what's most important first, and, you know, keep everything calm, because we are, you know, everybody doesn't respond as well, especially when you're working in a group or in a setting where you may have people waiting on you and something has come up. That's the thing. People are waiting on you. Something comes up, which pulls you away from them. And so now things can get escalated. So in that situation, just trying to remain calm, trying to, I'm going to make up a word, hippily explain to people what is going on, and move from there. Once the situation is under control, then go back to your routine. So that's, you just have to take a deep breath and say, okay, I'm here now. This is kind of what we have been trained for, believe it or not, you know? So just taking a deep breath, assessing the situation, knowing what I can do, what I can't do, getting help and having others help me, assist me in the situation.
Yeah. And I think that's an excellent approach, because a lot of times, you know, like you just mentioned, we are faced with sometimes scary, you know, conditions or things that come up. And we have to get our mind right. Right. We have to kind of take a deep breath, like you said, or just kind of, you know, calm ourselves down first before we can actually act on the situation. And then being able to assess the situation, like you said. And then asking for help is so important, or getting those people around you, right, who can help you, because we can't do it alone by ourselves, is also very important. So, yeah. So thank you for sharing that. I think that the way you described it kind of helps, you know, anyone listening to sort of with any situation. I think those three steps are important. Yeah. So what do you envision, you know, as we kind of think about what we're doing and gathering our thoughts and ideas and things that we're going to bring to the Gambia? What are you envisioning as sort of like short-term and long-term, you know, positive outcomes of us being there and the lasting impact on the community?
The relationship, like, this is just such an opportunity, the building blocks and the foundation for something and so much more and bigger. First, I'm hoping we establish good rapport with the people there, with the clinicians there, with the patients there, with the staff, that we can work on our isms so we can get all of that ironed out and know we're here to help people of color and where we came from to advance in this world, you know, and run this world. So I'm hoping for a relationship to build that transcends and goes back and forth across this Atlantic, across this diaspora. You know, we have students there coming here who can shadow, or even, you know, shadow and see what we do here, or even come and teach here. That would be awesome to do what we're doing there and bring them here, and see a whole different perspective. So I'm praying that doors will be open, even in the business field, for companies to become involved to supply what is needed. You know, this is a small cry, just a millimeter of what is needed in so many different areas and in different countries. And if the Gambia is how we start that, say, look, we have, let's help every others. So I'm just waiting for that dialogue, for this to just blow up, as they say, for this foundation that we are setting to be erected some type, this huge, massive interrelationship.
Yeah.
Between the Gambia, which you don't, we never know. This can spread to another country.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think you said it so well. It's the relationship building, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the most important part, I think, that we get out of this, right?
Yeah.
It goes beyond just, you know, us going there as U.S. trained physicians,
yes,
and bringing our expertise and our knowledge and, you know, all of that. But it's really about building the relationship first. Yeah. And then from that, everything else will flow.
Exactly.
Right. It's the building block,
yes,
like you said. Yeah. And I agree. I hope that this will, you know, continue past just the Gambia,
mm-hmm,
that it will expand to hopefully other areas,
yeah,
that more people will become involved and just bring an awareness,
mm-hmm,
right? I think
bring awareness.
Yeah.
And also to the collaborative with Dr. Carroll's organization, with Victoria's organization, like they will be called upon to plant seeds.
Yes.
In so many different places because of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this has been a fabulous interview, Dr. Adena. Thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with us today. I'm looking forward to spending time with you before we get to the Gambia, but definitely once we get there,
yes,
as well. And again, just for continuing to foster that relationship and hopefully continuing it even past our trip.
Okay. I thank you for having me. I appreciate this. This is awesome what you're doing. I admire those who have transitioned from clinical to other things that's fulfilling in life.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you for listening and for allowing us to be a part of your day. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to be the first to receive any new episodes as they are released.
Thanks again for listening today. If you'd like to support the Gambia Project, simply go to your browser and type gambiacollaborative.org. That's www.gambiacollaborative.org.
We hope you will join us on the road to the Gambia.
If you enjoyed podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Nurse Wellness Podcast, hosted by Wendy Garvin Mayo, focuses on the power of stress management and how it's foundational to being your best, doing your best, and giving your best. There's a wonderful episode that you should check out called Letting Go, where Wendy Garvin Mayo shares 6 strategies to release control and manage stress effectively. Check out Nurse Wellness Podcast on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.